Hi, this is Jim Swilly. Welcome to Metron Live. Metron is a Greek word that means sphere of influence. I believe in living your best life possible, and that's the reason for this podcast. This is my Metron. Now let me help you discover yours. It's a beautiful morning, last Sunday of May. Couple of things. Hey, Jeffrey. Next Sunday, we will be back in the theater. We are meeting at the theater where we've been for the last 8 years. Hey, Avery. Landmark Midtown Art Cinema. And we're there the first Sunday of every month. Hey, Ed. I started to say, I thought you were at Dollywood. tell Dolly we said hey. Hey, Fred. We're in the theater the first Sundays of every month, and we will be there next Sunday at 11 a.m. If you've never joined us, there's virtually no traffic in Atlanta on a Sunday morning. Hey, Cheryl. So if traffic avoidance is your issue, don't worry about that. Hey, Wynn. And we have Jefferson Banks, who's going to be singing for us, our artist, next month. Hey, Jeff, good to see you on here. And it's going to be good. I've never had a country singer before, but you're going to love this guy. I've known him. I dedicated him when he was a baby, known him his whole life. And he's a good guy. And then that is June the 5th, not June the 6th. That's next Sunday, June 5th. And as I always tell you, if you get the shout-outs, they will always tell you any changes or anything. The shout-out is that email that we've been sending out every single week for 8 years, and it has everything that you need to know. Hey, Cheryl. Good to see you on here today. Mom said you came by again yesterday, and I appreciate it. Thank you. And then we'll be back in the theater. Hey, Leslie. Fine wine. Yes, absolutely. We'll be back in the theater first Sunday of July. And then first weekend of August, we'll be in St. Simon's for meditation weekend number 15. Oh, you did? You just bought my book that came out a decade ago? Well, I'm glad you finally got it. I appreciate it. Be a good time to have a advertisement for Jim Swilly Books. Available on Amazon.com and at JimSwillyBooks.com. Mavis Barber. Anyway, the book he's talking about is called First the Good News. What is it? The Truth About God, the Gospel, and What It Really Means to Be Gay. And we'll be, as I was saying, we'll be, hey Kimberly, we'll be in St. Simon's for our 15th meditation weekend. Right now, it looks like it's the greatest number of people we've ever had signed up to go to one of these. And St. Simon's is magical. St. Simon's is worth you going just for any, hey Romanita, for any reason. But when we add the synergy of the meditation weekends, every time we've gone, last time we were there, we had that massive double rainbow. The time we were there before was the blue moon that appeared. And they've all just been incredible. So you don't have to sign up for anything. You just click on, go up to the cover photo on my page. Hey, Samantha. And click on that. And that has all the information for you. And that's going to be August the 6th and the 7th. We'll do a sunset meditation on Saturday and a sunrise meditation on Sunday. Oh, thank you, Jeffrey. I appreciate that. Good. Y'all buy some books. I still have quite a bit of inventory left. People keep asking me, when are you going to write another book? I say, when I start moving some of the 16 I've already written. So, yeah, buy some books, please. But, hey, Beth. So, anyway, we're really looking forward to, I think about it a little bit every day. And when I see another one of you is booked your hotel, I'm always so excited. Hey, Linda. You're coming back down, Linda. Good. I'm glad you're going to be there. And as I think most of you already know this, but St. Simons actually has more variety of places to stay than Jekyll does. It's a little bit bigger. And you can stay in St. Simons, you can stay in Jekyll, you can stay in Brunswick. Some people stay in Brunswick. You can make it as, you can go high dollar if you want to. Hey, Leona. Or you can economize. There's Airbnbs there. There's a really nice array of types of hotels. So in any place you stay in St. Simons, it's right at the beach. There's no way you can be too far away from it. The beach is everywhere. So even if you get a place that doesn't have a beach view, you're still, you couldn't be more than 5-10 minutes away from the beach at the most, maybe not even that much. I want to say this before I get into my teaching and I forget about it. Tomorrow is Memorial Day. Memorial Day matters. Memorial Day is different from Veterans Day. Veterans Day is when we acknowledge veterans. Many of you who are watching are veterans. Memorial Day is specifically to honor the people who have made the ultimate sacrifice. And even though I'm, you know, much more politically a dove and, you know, sort of a product of the 60s. Hey, Henry. I certainly honor the people who gave their life. It grieved me to hear somebody in the White House for years call them suckers and losers. I do not believe that the men, some women, but mostly men who have died in battle, I do not believe they were suckers or losers. They were heroes. And so I do want to honor those who have fallen in battle, because the freedoms we take for granted every day were, you know, in large part bought by blood. So I'd like to observe a moment of silence. Just hold your comments for a moment as we honor the people who have given their lives on Memorial Day. Or on this Memorial Day weekend, let's honor them. Moment of silence begins now. We also speak peace to the families of those who have lost people in battle. Also, you know, I haven't posted a lot about it because, at this point it's so overwhelming, it's hard to know if posting does anything or means anything. Obviously, the shooting in Buffalo some days ago, which was racially motivated, that's a whole issue. And then the horrible shooting in Texas. Ken just told me, I don't know any details, apparently there was a shooting last night in Chattanooga. We were planning on going up to Chattanooga yesterday and just decided not to. I don't say a lot about it because the same thing gets said every time one of these things happens, but the only thing I did post, there's a long list of all the school shootings that have taken place since around Columbine, and it's overwhelming when you read. There have been shootings other places, but especially when you read, the majority of them have been in schools, and it's just it takes you a while to scroll down. Am I saying this right? I think it was like 280 schools that have had mass shootings. And I don't say a lot about it because it's the same argument that happens every time. And all that I see is people on both sides of the gun issue just double down on it, on their position, fed by whichever news outlet they watch. But I will say this. Of all the things that people, I've heard in the last few hours, people have blamed school shootings on, because they took prayer out of school. Let me just say, there's other nations that don't have prayer in the schools and they don't have mass shootings. I've read several people who have posted, well, it's because of legalized abortion, that's why there's school shootings. Well, there's other nations that have legalized abortion that don't have school shootings, or mass shootings. Other people have posted, it's because there's not a strong family structure and absentee fathers. Well, there's people who are raised by single mothers all over the world, and there still are not school shootings. I understand the Second Amendment. I just find it hard to believe that those founding fathers in the 1700s, when they were talking about muskets and, you know, a very young, fragile nation that they weren't sure they could maintain their freedom from England, when they talked about maintaining a strong militia, I really don't think they had in mind that 18-year-olds could buy machine guns and gun down children. I don't think that's what Thomas Jefferson had in mind, as second graders having their heads blown off. And you know, the fact that kids who aren't even allowed to drink can just go buy assault weapons, which there's the only reason anybody would have an assault weapon is for a mass shooting. I mean, there's country boys that have been deer hunting and been shooting shotguns since they were 8, 9 years old. Nobody has an issue with that. People like that, they know what those guns are for. That's what it's used for. Assault AR-15s and guns with magazines, they are for one purpose only. And I'll tell you something else, just another thing that I was seeing this morning is the young man who did the shooting in Texas was also posting a lot of threats against women online, very misogynistic. And what struck me about it is that many of the girls he threatened said, we're so used to being trolled online, we're so used to being threatened with rape and kidnap and have our heads blown off that we didn't even take it seriously. We hear it all the time from boys. And that's scary, you know, the fact that nearly every female that I've seen, every female politician, every woman who's outspoken on TV, whether she's a comedian or a commentator, they have all said they are regularly threatened online, anonymously usually, to be raped and kidnapped and that sort of thing. Misogyny is evil, and Jesus was a feminist. I can make that point for again and again. It's not what I'm going to teach on today. But I'm just going to tell you the truth. I can't even bring myself to say our thoughts and prayers are with those people. I mean, yeah, I guess we're praying for them. What I'm praying for is that politicians will change. And nobody's trying to take anybody's Second Amendment rights away. But these assault weapons were banned for years. I don't know why they let the ban run out. I don't know why they didn't make it permanent. But anyway, I'd rather see people vote instead of just thoughts and prayers. Thoughts and prayers, you know, I don't know. That's really helping. Anyway, you know, I'm not trying to bring the room down. I'm just saying that's, you know, that's the nature of the beast. And let me say this also. I see a lot of people post, when ministers don't speak out about stuff, they're complicit in this sort of thing. I don't take that personally, but I would also like to say, in case any of that's ever aimed at me, is I've said plenty of stuff about racism and misogyny, and if I don't talk about it nonstop, or if I'm not posting about it, engaging in arguments with people on Facebook, doesn't mean I don't say a lot about or haven't said about it. My conscience is clear on that point. Anyway, that's reality, and we have to learn how to compartmentalize. It is still a beautiful day. There's still a reason to have gratitude. Still reason to believe in God. Still reason to expect the best. And so I believe that my listeners are mature enough to compartmentalize all of that. That If anything, that's one reason why there are places like Metron that continue to shine a light. I think if there weren't, and I'm not saying we're the only one, but if it weren't for places like Metron that speak the truth, I don't know, I think things would even be worse. So there you have it. We'll do a few affirmations, a few breaths, and then I've got a word for you. I am well. I am wellness. I am. I am healed. I am health. I am. When I gesture to you, that's when you say it out loud. You repeat after me. I am whole. I am wholeness. Say it out loud. I am. I am blessed. Say it. I am a blessing. Say it. I am. I am peaceful. Say it. I am peace. I am. I am free. I am freedom. Say it. I am. I am anointed. Say it. I am the anointing. Say it. I am. Beautiful. We always want to move it up to the I am affirmation. And then let's do a little bit of breath work. We'll get much more into this at the meditation weekend. But we're going to breathe in through your nose, hold it, and then exhale through your mouth. If you're sitting, sit up straight. Clear your lap, both feet on the floor. Get your body aligned to channel the right kind of energy. And let's go. Here we go. In, hold, out. Inhale, exhale. In through the nose, hold, out through the mouth. Inhale, exhale. In, out. Beautiful. I speak peace to you. Sorry. I speak peace to you this morning. And I believe that your heart is good ground for this, in which this word is about to be sown. I speak into this atmosphere and I say, let there be light. I used to hear people say this, and I guess I said it back in the day some. It was in full gospel or Pentecostal churches, it was kind of common to hear a minister come to the pulpit and say, I had a message I was going to preach this morning, and the Lord changed it, or God gave me a different word. And that rarely happens with me, because a word with me is usually distilled gradually through the week. I start thinking about a word days before I deliver it, and the word becomes attractive to confirmations. So if I'm already thinking of something, then I'll begin to notice, oh, that's like that word I'm going to speak, or, you know, something somebody will say or something somebody will post. It's confirmation. That's sort of always been my process, line upon line, precept upon precept. This morning, however, I had some things in mind that I wanted to say, so it wasn't a total shift, but it was a shift in what I had planned on talking about. And it just happened this morning. You know, sometimes when you're online and you have to do password recovery, sometimes there's it might be an app you have or any number of accounts that you have. I mean, you know, we do everything on our smartphones now. So sometimes if you've forgotten a password or you've forgotten a username, you have to ask for it. And I've noticed mostly now, if your phone is connected, they'll just send you a code. They'll text you a code and you put that in, and that confirms that it's really you. But I noticed this morning I was looking for something, and I had to log back in, and there was a little check that said, check I am human. And they do that because these bots will, you know, log on to websites. And so the reason they have these, there's two ways they do it. Sometimes it's a thing called CAPTCHA, and it's where you have to put in a series of letters that it's like a code to unlock your the website you're trying to get in on. And then sometimes they'll give you like a series of, like a collage of photos, and you have to, like, it'll be something like, click on all the bridges, click on all the boats, click on all the motorcycles, click on all the streetlights. And sometimes, you know, it's obnoxious because you have to really look at it. Like, I don't know, is that a boat or a bus? What is that? But what really struck me today is that one question or that you have to answer, click, I am human. Something about that just seemed to resonate with me this morning. And I was thinking about the scripture. It's in 2 Corinthians chapter 4. And it's when Paul says in verse 7, but we have this the previous verse, he's talking about the God who commanded the light to shine in the darkness has also shined in our hearts. And then he says in verse 7, but we have this treasure in earthen vessels that the excellency of the power may be of God and not of us. And then he goes on, that's where he does that whole piece about we're cast down but not utterly destroyed. And, you know, it's classic Pauline literature. And it's beautiful. I like the tone of 2 Corinthians because much of 2 Corinthians is a retraction of 1 Corinthians. So I like that. The very fact that 2 Corinthians has to exist at all means that the Word is a living thing. The Bible is not the definitive Word of God. Even the people who wrote it or were editing it, including Paul. Several of the things Paul said in 2 Corinthians were in direct opposition to what he wrote to them in 1 Corinthians. So this idea that God's intention was to put this, make this incredible rule book that could never be amended in any way, it's not even supported by the Bible writers. I don't know. I'm not really sure where bibliolatry came from, the worship of the Bible, the deification of the Bible. I think maybe it's got its tentacles in a lot of things. But anyway, the scripture definitely needs to be rightly divided, which means it's not a perfect thing. It's when people say, is the Bible infallible? I'm like, no, it doesn't even profess to be infallible. Paul said all scripture is given by inspiration. He doesn't say the scriptures are infallible. And I think when he was writing that, I think he'd be surprised that people consider that scripture. Some of those administrative letters he was writing about individual church governments, how they have become considered holy writ. Anyway, most of you who hear me, you hear me say that a lot, but it's so germane to everything I talk about. And I remember when I was in Bible college, I had to take a course in Christology, which Christology is, it's the study of Christ. And we went through all these different theologians and church history and the evolution of the concept of Jesus Christ being divine, and the early church fathers didn't necessarily believe that, and the divinity piece was sort of added later, and then there's the whole concept of, was he divine, or did he contain divinity, or did he house divinity? John 1:14 says the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. It didn't say it was housed in flesh. And then finally, what I was taught as what they told us was the truth when I was in college was the mystery of Jesus Christ is that he was not 50% divine, 50% human. He was not 50% God, 50% man. He was 100% God, 100% man, 100% divine, 100% humanity. And there's no way to intellectualize that. How can a being be all God and all man? And how can that being be called the firstborn among many brethren? Because if we really believe Jesus was the first fruits from the dead, and we believe in that definition of Christology, then that would have to mean that the ultimate goal is for us to become fully human and fully divine, and that those two things are not mutually exclusive. And the reason I want to talk about that today is I think sometimes when we talk about our divinity and embracing our divinity, there's nearly the implication that our humanity is less than. And even if I've said that in my teaching, I want to correct that, because I don't know that. I believe the divinity part is real. I don't want to ever imply that the humanity part is inferior. Let me give you a little context. I love the words in red in the Gospels, the words that Jesus spoke. And people are very unfamiliar. Most people that call themselves Christians now really are very much obsessed with Moses' law. You don't hear a lot of gospel teaching. Many of the things I've taught over the years that some people label controversial, some people would challenge me and say, "Where did you get that?" And I'll say, "From Jesus." I mean, that, like, I don't know why people don't read the words of Jesus. But, you know, Jesus said amazing things, life-altering things. Sometimes the things he said were very enigmatic. Sometimes Jesus would answer a question with another question. Sometimes he spoke in ways that nearly confounded and confused people, and he didn't even try to explain himself. Like when he says, "Unless you eat my flesh and drink my blood, you have no part of me." And it says that people left his ministry because of that. That was considered a hard saying. And he didn't even come back with a retraction or an explanation. In fact, he sort of doubles down on it and says to the remaining disciples, he says, "Well, are you guys going to leave too?" And they said, "Well, where would we go? You have the words of life." They weren't even saying they understood his words of life. They were just saying, we can't leave you because we're so addicted's not the word, but we're so compelled by the words you say, even if we don't fully understand them, we can't leave you. I mean, we know never a man spake like this. But you could definitely make the case that when Jesus said, "Unless you eat my flesh and drink my blood," he was in a sense saying, "Unless you embrace my humanity along with my divinity, you have no part of me." It's definitely a part of the Eucharist or the communion, that the bread and the wine represent humanity and divinity, and they're taken together. One's not superior to the other. And sometimes Jesus would say things that were just troubling, like the Syrophoenician woman who comes to him and says, "My daughter is sick with a demon." And Jesus, I mean, he just looks at her and he says, "Why should I give the..." Well, first of all, he says, I'm not called to any place but the house of Israel. And then he says, "Why should we give the bread to the dogs?" And the woman says, "Well, even the dogs get the crumbs from the table." And he says, "Okay, well, for this saying, your daughter's made well." And I used to do a whole teaching about that, about how that woman reached into the future when Jesus' ministry was going to be to the Gentiles as well, and she borrowed from the future. And that's, you know, that's a valid teaching. I'm not retracting that. But you can't deny the fact that Jesus was raised in a culture where, first of all, women were looked down on. Secondly, people who were not considered Israelites were called dogs. That's why, you know, some homophobic preachers will say, "Well, the Bible calls homosexuals dogs." I'm like, well, the Bible writers called anybody that was not considered mainstream dogs, including Gentiles. Gentiles were called dogs. I mean, the Jews were dogging it up, man. They were calling everybody bow-wow this and bow-wow that. And so Jesus said, you know, he's raised in a culture where he was taught people like this are dogs. So you know, sometimes we don't want to think of this because we want to think of Jesus being so divine and perfect. But is it possible that Jesus had to work through his own misogyny, his own racism, his own xenophobia? Because maybe that was just the natural instinct for him to say, why are you talking to me? You're a dog. And, you know, then he turns it into something where, you know, the woman gets what she asked for. But on the surface, it's a very troubling statement. If somebody said that today, if Jesus were here today and said that, he would be a victim of cancel culture. People would say, whatever happened to Jesus of Nazareth? Well, you know, there's a YouTube video of him calling a woman a dog and saying they shouldn't give the bread to the dogs. And so, you know, he just lost all of his followers. And, you know, one time he calls Peter Satan. Right after he's called him, said, you have this revelation that the rock, you're the rock. This revelation is the rock that your name is Petros, and on this Petra, this rock, I'll build my church. And then he said other things, you know, like one time somebody came to him and called him good, and he said, why do you call me good? There's none good but God. And you can see that his humanity was triggered by his familiar environment, because the scripture says when he goes into his hometown, the people just called him Joseph the carpenter's son, and because of that, he couldn't do any mighty miracles. So clearly, there was some sort of evolution he had to go through. You know, Hebrews 5:8 says, though he was a son, he learned obedience through the things he suffered. So this idea that the divine Christ child was in the manger knowing who he was, I don't think can be supported from the scriptures. And Jesus sort of went through an evolution. And then, you know, the classic example is when he goes into the temple and he sees the money changers, and he doesn't go talk to them compassionately. He fashions a whip and he starts busting heads. I mean, it's an act of violence. He starts turning the tables over. This is where these people made their living. He physically chases them out of the temple. He goes all alpha male on them. You could definitely make a case for toxic masculinity, because, you know, when he says my temple should be a house of prayer, he's saying it while he's beating the living daylights out of somebody. Again, if there was a YouTube video of somebody going through and beating people up and running people out of his church, these days there might be an audience for that. We're living in very different times now. But anyway, you could definitely make a case for Jesus sometimes saying something that, you know, was at best troubling. And we, you know, we always want to believe the best in him. So, you know, we look for, well, this is what I think he really meant. What if he just meant what he said? What if he really did think that women like her were dogs? What if that was just the honest reaction he had to her, and then finally thought better of it? But what if that was just a reflex to him? What if everybody's a little bit racist on you know, on some level, and something triggers somebody, and before they know it, they've said something? I don't know. And you know, that classic book, The Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz, one of his four basic agreements is be impeccable with your word. And I love that. I think that's something wonderful to aspire to. But I think back, I was thinking about this week because something happened. I'm going to share it with you. And it made me think, I got called this week on things I have said publicly that, and I'll explain it to you in a minute, but it got me to thinking of other things that I may have said over the years. I've always known I had a gift, I've always known I was called, I've always known I was anointed, and I've always known I'm original. I am as proud of my originality as I am of anything else. Because when I teach something, like I've never heard, I'm not saying nobody else has, I never heard anybody else teach on God bringing the animals to see what, Adam to see what he would name them, and that being, I've never heard anybody teach on Genesis 1, 2, and 3 like I do. Maybe they do. I just have never seen it. And if you'll notice, if I ever, if I mention something, I will always give credit where it came from. I always say, it's like so-and-so says in their book. Sometimes I quote some of you, something that you said that really impacted me. So I don't steal material because I don't have to. I've always had original thoughts. I've always known my gift was unique and needed, and I knew I wasn't just parroting what other people said. There's some sermons you can trace. You know, you can go to sermons.com and say, oh, that's where that guy got that. I challenge you to trace my sermons. I mean, I promise you, they're original. And if it's not an original thought, I will always credit the person that I read this from. I have no problem doing that. Mainly, well, one reason is because I have so many people who've stolen from me for so many years that I'm very sensitive to, you know, giving somebody honor for their revelation or their work or their study. But I was thinking about it this week, not in a way to beat myself up, but in a way to understand, like, why did I say that time? Why did I respond that way? Not because I want to go back in the past. I'm all about living in the now. But I also want to understand. I believe that each one of us has been given a life. And this life is it's a mystery, and we're all our own individual Sherlock Holmes. We're all looking for clues and riddles, and you know, we're trying to figure out, like David saying, who can understand his errors. And I'm not talking about being so introspective that you read meaning into everything and just drive yourself crazy. But I think there's something, especially if your self-esteem is strong enough to handle it, to looking into, why did I say that? And I was thinking about, you know, I celebrated my 50th year of ministry this last February. But my words were not always recorded. Like, I started preaching in 1972, and I'm sure there were some tapes here and there. That was back in the cassette tape days. You know, a sermon I preached somewhere, because I traveled a little bit and preached. But not until in 1980, when I graduated from college, I went to work for my dad, and I was his associate pastor for 5 years. So from 1980 to 1985, I preached several times a week. I mean, he and I alternated Sunday morning services. We did two Sunday. I did an early service 1 week, and then the next week I did the late service. I did every Wednesday night. I taught 5 days a week, I had a Bible college there, and I taught an hour every day in the high school that we had. So it was, and I had a radio program. So it was very, for years, it was not uncommon for me to preach 15, 16, 20, 25 times a week. And that's not a hyperbole. I mean, you just do the math. If you're speaking several times a day, 5, 6, 7 days a week, I mean, it adds up. And when all of those sermons and teachings are recorded, that's years of your voice, every little thing that you say being held on a recording. And then I started what became Church in the Now, and I was there for right at 30 years. So for 30 years, everything that I said publicly was recorded. And then I've been at Metron for 8 years. So what is that? 35, 40, for a good solid 43 years of the full 50, my words have been recorded on a regular basis. Recently, I had stuff when we liquidated the big building on Iris Drive. Some of my office stuff was still in Ernie Avery's basement. Had been there for a decade. So a few weeks ago, I I thought, you know, I need to get that stuff out of their basement. I'm sure they'd like to have that space back. So Judah met me over there, and we took, and he took some stuff, I took some stuff, and there's just boxes and boxes and boxes of messages that I've preached and things I've forgotten that I even talked about. And like sometimes back during the CD years, somebody would be listening to a because I used to do a lot of tape series and CD series, and somebody would be listening to something that I'd done like a decade before, and they'd come ask me, whatever happened to that guy that you talked to in line this week? And I'd say, what are you talking about? Some of my stories have been repeated lots and lots of times, obviously, and then a lot of my stories were just in the moment. I never said them again, so they had been listening, but I had no idea what they were talking about. So it's very possible that in 40-ish, 50-ish years of hours and 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 hours of your speaking being recorded, that somewhere in there you're going to say some things that are regrettable. Some things you're going to say, wow, Don Miguel Ruiz, I definitely was not impeccable with my speech. And, you know, it just is what it is. And, I know what it's like to go out and preach a sermon and lose families over something that you said. And, I mean, you know, that just comes with the territory. That's not unique to me. That happened for years. Let me cut to what really brought all this up. I've been meeting with my sons. You know, Christina, my daughter, lives in Santa Fe. She's going to be here in July. So while she's here, she's certainly welcome to meet with us. But I've been meeting with, I call them the boys. I know they're grown men, but I've been meeting with the boys every Wednesday night for since January. So for several months now. And we've sort of tongue-in-cheek called it Men's Fellowship Wednesday Night Bible Study. That's not really what it is. It's just easier with their schedules for us just to have a standing appointment, and whoever can make it will make it. Like this past Wednesday night, it was just Judah and me because Jonah and Jared are both in Europe. Jared just left for a month-long European tour, and Jonah will be getting back from like a two-month European tour next week sometime, week after next. So most of the times it was all four of us, the three of them. The week before it was just Jared and me. And each time there's an interesting dynamic. There's some things you end up talking about when it's just two of you that you don't talk about when it's four of you. So in our meetings, we're very candid about a lot of things, and it's kind of a therapy session, and it's a lot of things. And every week we'll go around the table and we'll say, what are you grateful for? What did you learn this week? What challenges are you having that we might can help you with? And if we have time, we'll go around and say, what do you appreciate about someone or everyone at this table? And we've had some, it's been wonderful for all of us. It's been very therapeutic. I mean, Jared's heavily involved with AA right now, so he brings a lot of insight from recovery, and that's been very interesting. And I don't want to give any more information than Judah has, but some of you that go to Judah's church know what's going on with his mom right now. And she's not hiding that. I mean, she needs some help in an area, and she's getting help. So kudos to her, and we're believing for the best for her. But, you know, we've all been through a lot in the last few years. And so it's not morose. I mean, we have a good time, and we laugh, and we joke. But we also talk about very real things. And in our first meeting, when we decided to meet every week, I told them, I said, look, if any of you guys have any issues with me at all, I really want this to be a safe place where you could talk to me about it. I don't want us to go, I mean, my dad was a wonderful man, but, you know, he was not the kind of person, and most men from his generation weren't, he wasn't the kind of person that you confronted with grievances. My dad, he came from a model of masculinity, and some of you had dads, or maybe you're married to somebody like this. You never, it's not unique to Donald Trump. It's like, you never admit you're wrong, ever, ever. You never apologize. You never take it back. To admit you were wrong about something is a sign of weakness or inferiority. And so that's you know, he came from that generation where that was ingrained in him. Never admit you were wrong. You're the man, you're the father. The father cannot be, the patriarchy cannot be challenged in any way. Whatever father says is what goes. And that's something I worked out with my father and you know, sometimes still work through things, but that's not true in the generation with my sons. I don't have any problem hearing somebody out, and if they've got a valid point, I'm willing to own it and say, well, you're right. I hadn't thought about that, but you were right to call me on that, and what can I do to make it right, and I apologize. And I want to say, before I tell you what I'm about to tell you, I want to be clear that this was not, this conversation that took place between Judah and me did not come with him saying, I've got to talk to you about this because I'm mad at you. I don't want to give a false impression. He and I were just having a regular conversation. And because of the conversation we were having, this came up. Something that I frankly was unaware of. But as he began to say it to me, and he did not ask me to say this publicly, probably doesn't even want me to say it publicly. I need to say it publicly, though, because I need to set the record straight on this. But he was telling me in our conversation, a very, you know, man-to-man conversation, he said, you know, when I first moved, he's had his ministry, the movement, for a long time. Before he moved it out to Covington, now they're in Conyers, and they're about to move to another location in Conyers next week. He had a ministry for several years before that. And he was my youth pastor for, I don't know what, 5-6 years. When he was churching and I was youth pastor, he had a bigger congregation than most senior pastors have. And he was an excellent youth pastor. Quite frankly, I mean this, no dig against any previous ones, but he was the best one I ever had. And I'm not just saying that because he was my son. He really was. I'm getting out of the sun a little bit. Sorry. There, I'm going to do that. Anyway, so we're good. And I am very aware that my coming out in 2010 definitely gave him some challenges in the ministry. Because so many places he would go to minister, that's what they wanted to talk about. And because many people asked him to denounce me, he wouldn't do it. It closed a lot of doors for him. I'm aware of that. I can't do anything about that. And for a long time, he put off going to the Conyers or Covington area, which he really believed was kind of his heritage. Because when we were at Church of the Now, he was my heir apparent. If I had one, he would be it. And so he tried to avoid, for my sake, he avoided going there because he didn't want to ever capitalize on the grievances of people. Like, there was a bishop who subsequently committed suicide, but after I came out, he made a big statement how that he was going to start a church in Conyers to shepherd the scattered people from Church of the Now. And I thought, really? Seriously? And I never spoke out against him publicly, but that was, I mean, I had lots of pastors calling me, asking if I would give them my membership list so that they could, you know, sort of capitalize on my leaving Conyers. And I would say, well, I'm not leaving the ministry. I guess because I've driven back and forth nearly every day for so many years from Conyers to Atlanta, it just to me Atlanta seems like down the road. It never occurred to me that moving 30 minutes down I-20 was going to be a deal breaker for so many people. It clearly was, and you know, is what it is. People have issues with the city, and I'm way past fighting that battle. But I never had that with Judah. Judah never was opportunistic about that, and waited a long time before he ever even considered going out there. He even looked into churches in Florida and California, and finally, it was one day that he had ministered for me at Metron in music, and he was telling me about. He said, "You know, I would never go without your blessing, but I think I'm supposed to be in Conyers and Covington. That's where I grew up. That's where I went to high school." And I said, "You know what? I think it's time. I think you should go with my absolute blessing." We sent money to them to help, you know, as a one of our outreaches. I've made a public statement that if you live in the Conyers area and you want to go there, that's fine. And some people took me up on it. And I think, well, that is what I said. So, all right, fine. So, apparently, I'm not saying I was unaware that I said it. I was not aware that I said it so much. I was not aware that Judah watched Metron as much as he did. But as he was telling me Wednesday night, he said, "You know, you haven't done it in a long time, but you for quite a few times talked about." The people at my church are there because they've got a grievance against you, and that's the common denominator. Maybe that wasn't the exact words, but that was the implication. And that 100% of my congregation were people that used to go to Church of the Now. And I said, "Judah, I'm not saying I didn't say it, because I can show you the clips." I said, "No, I feel bad enough about that." I said, I just assumed you knew. I never meant you. I was never meaning that as an indictment to you. Those were some old triggers that when I would look at a picture of your congregation, I'd see, you know, several people there, some of whom aren't even there now, who left my ministry and left it badly. I couldn't help but be a little bit triggered by that, and I'm sorry. I definitely... must have been speaking out of grievance or hurt. And I said, "I need to apologize to you, because that's not even true. I was there last Father's Day, and I didn't know most of the people there. It's an entirely different congregation now. So this idea that people who go to his church are there because they don't like gay people, that couldn't be true, because he spent so much time publicly defending me. And he's even, I don't know if it's okay for me to say this, he's performed same-sex weddings. So he's definitely, even when I've told him to distance himself for his own reputation's sake, he's never done that. So he deserved better than that. I apologized. I said, "What can I do to make it right?" He said, "I don't want you to say anything." He said, "I don't think you do it anymore, but there was a season where you did it a lot." And I said, "Well, that just sucks. I hate that I did that." And that's why I wrote a meditation this week. I said, sometimes you get busted for something that you said, and there's no... to try to say, "Oh, I'm sorry you heard it that way," or "I'm sorry you got offended," that's not an apology. I just should have never said that. And I'll tell you something else. If I ever said, even by implication, that Metron was a higher spiritual plane than the movement church, first of all, that is not true, and I would have never meant that. I can't guarantee you that I didn't say something that could have been interpreted that way, but I don't, in my head, and I know this sounds like a justification, but it just is what it is. In my head, when I would say things like, "I may not be what you're looking for, maybe you need to be at the movement," I'm saying that because it's more of a church model with like praise and worship and a nursery and children's church. things that I do not offer at Metron. But even if I thought that we were some, you know, Metron is next level spirituality, that's gross to be that full of yourself to say something like that. That's, you know, the scripture says, knowledge puffs up, but love builds up. And to say that you're superior to somebody else, it's even made me be careful when I just make a blanket statement about all Christians. I don't think that's true. Some of my issues with people have not... It wasn't just because they were Christian. It's because of they were legalists and homophobic. And that none of that applies to Judah or the movement or any of that. So he did not ask me to do this. I need to make a public apology and retraction of that. If I ever said anything that even alluded to that, I am proud of him. He is my beloved son in whom I'm well pleased. I believe he's carrying on not just my legacy, but the legacy of his grandfather and great-grandfathers. And if I've said anything other than that, then call me on it, because I don't want that out there. I want to own that. Just because you say something bad doesn't make you a bad person. And there's nothing wrong with just saying, you're right, I shouldn't have said that. Thank you for making me aware of it. No, that was not in my intention, but now when I hear you say it back to me, I can totally see how you would hear it that way. I would have probably heard it the same way. I apologize. I was wrong. Thank you for telling me about it, and I'll be a better man because of it. I'll be a better father because of it. So again, there were no tears involved. I even said to him, I said, why didn't you say something to me 4 years ago? And he said, we were going through enough stuff back then. I said, well, for future reference, you know, next time if I say something that you have an issue with, call me immediately. I'm not talking to everybody listening to my voice saying, I'm calling him because I got an issue. I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about my son. Some of you, I don't feel that way toward. I'm just telling you. I value my relationship with everybody, but there's an accountability I have as a father. I mean, I consider my calling as a father much higher than my calling as a pastor or a bishop. And I'm only saying that to say, I own it. I apologize for it. I retract it. It's not the truth. And it's not even how I feel anymore. I don't have any hurt with those people. I'm fine. I have no... When you talk about church in the now, to me now, it's like I just think about the good times. I'm not walking around speaking out of my wounds. And sometimes, even though you're healed, you still have a neuropath in your brain that's still saying stuff that's not even necessarily true for you anymore. So... I want to get that out of the atmosphere. Whatever mojo I created with that, I need to end that right now. That is not true. That is not what I. That's not where my heart is, and I have nothing but good feelings toward that ministry and speak a blessing over it and want nothing but good things for him. And I have to say, you know, of my dad. We had a lot of issues, but that was never it. You know, because when I started my church, which became Church of the Now, a lot of people left his church and came to my church, and he never made me feel awkward or weird about it. So I am without excuse in that sense. I am the chiefest of sinners, and I fall on my sword, and I completely apologize on that. And to turn it into a teaching is when I was checking off to get in that website this morning, and it says, I am human. I checked it. I thought, yeah, I am human. And what I want to say to everybody, and maybe I need to turn this into a teaching for parents, because, you know, as a parent, you wish you had done some things differently or said some things differently. Well, then change it. I want, you know, for the time that I have left on this earth, I want my kids to be good with me and not feel like they couldn't talk to me about stuff. Because I didn't feel that liberty with my dad. And I want to, you know, my mom's probably watching, so I want to be careful what I say. But I, like, that's a... people in that generation are in, they're just in a different place with that kind of thing. But for my generation, I want to, like, I'm an open book. Talk to me. Tell me what's, you know, how can I make this better? How can I make a relationship better? I don't want you just to love me. I want you to like me. And I believe, like, if any of my kids said, I don't think you're proud of me, then I would say, no, I don't accept that. There's no way you couldn't know I'm proud of you. But there's some other issues that, yes, you have a valid point. I receive your valid point. And good. I apologize. I was wrong. And I'm to turn this into a teaching for you, I want to say, you know, embrace your humanity. And when I say embrace it, I don't mean just say whatever you want to say. Say, there, I said it. No, you need to be responsible for the things you say. And there's some things you say that are wrong. I can't go back through 50 years of ministry and retract every human thing that I said. Because I'm sure, you know, there may be people listening to me right now going, I got some stuff I could confront you on. Well, for most of you, I'm just going to say, you just need to forgive me and embrace my humanity with my divinity. Because I could also say this, you know, for a man like me to have, you know, suffered hate mail and death threats and excommunication and, you know, people in my family not speaking to me, whatever. I think I've weathered it with a pretty sunny disposition. I'm not bitter. The screen's getting dark. I'm not bitter. I'm not angry. So, yeah, I'm human, but kudos to me. I've done pretty good in that score as well. I think the screen is telling me my time may be up because it's getting dark. But I just want to say to you, embrace your humanity along with your divinity. And it's not going to admit you were wrong about something and apologize. You actually have to have a healthy self-esteem to do it. And it doesn't mean you're a bad person. I'm not a bad father. Judah doesn't think I'm a bad father. He didn't even need for me to say this. He's already told me he forgave me. But I needed you to know that I was saying this, and I will never say anything like that again. The movement is fine with me. I don't have issues with anybody there. We're all good. God bless us, everyone. All right. So I hope that blesses you perfectly imperfect people. And that you depart from your illusions of perfection. I could say a lot more about this, but I think I've made my point. If you want to give to Church in the Now, go to bishinthenow.com. You click on there. It's very easy. You could do it right online. If you want to give to me directly, I've got all the Cash Apps, and the PayPal that I have now is the right one. All that situation is over. So I don't want to talk about that anymore. But you can, if you give through Messenger, it goes straight to PayPal. And sign up for Meditation Weekend 15. And especially, I want to see you next Sunday in the theater in Midtown. I want you to, if you want to wear a mask, that's fine. I'm talking about a face mask, not a scary mask. And I just speak a blessing over your humanity and your divinity, that you embrace the yin and the yang, that you embrace all of it, that everything about you that is divine, everything that about you is that is human, it's all perfectly working together, and you are created in the image of God, and that you go out and create a beautiful week for yourself. All right? Peace. I love you.